Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. America's struggling housing market continues to weigh down the entire economy. President Obama yesterday announced an expanded plan for refinancing. And there's another plan out there. Give foreigners who buy a chunk of American real estate American visas. Let them buy up the homes and condos Americans can't afford and move right in. In some prime communities, it's already happening. This hour on Point, is this the answer? American homes, foreign owners. Joining me first today from New York is Nick Timorous, real estate reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Nick, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So much news about housing. Here's President Obama trying to step around Congress, or indeed stepping around Congress, to lower requirements for refinancing. Here's this coming out of the U.S. Senate. Let's get some more foreigners in here buying. First, Nick, just right off the top, why so much concern about the U.S. housing market and doing something to get it going?
Well, I think it's become clear over the last couple of years just how sick the housing market is and how much of a drag that is creating on the economy. Because if people can't sell their homes, they can't move to take new jobs, they can't spend money, they're not going to buy new things if they feel house poor. In the past, homes were both a traditional source of savings, so you could retire, you could start small businesses by taking money out of your house. But it was also a primary source of wealth and savings that is just now gone for a lot of Americans. So when we say, well, gee, why isn't the economy getting better increasingly, it looks like it's because the housing market is still under such stress.
So here we've got two senators, a Democrat and a Republican. The president's got his thing going on, but Charles Schumer, Democrat, New York, Mike Lee, Republican, Utah, they're saying, let's make it more enticing for foreigners to come in and buy. What exactly are they proposing here, Jacob? Then they'd get visas in return, but what would a foreigner need to do to buy?
Well, they would have to spend $500,000 in cash, and half of that could be spent on just one house. The other $250,000 could go towards the same house, or it could go to buy other properties to be rented out. And the idea here really is that we don't have enough demand right now. Homes are cheap in many parts of the country. They are very affordable. We have mortgage rates that have probably never been lower, certainly in any of our adult lifetimes. And yet Americans are not buying. They're either not confident or they're not able to go out and make a home purchase right now. But you have a lot of foreign demand, and you're seeing it already in some of the hardest hit markets in Phoenix and Florida and parts of Southern California. Foreigners are interested in buying homes, but they're not going to if they're not sure they're going to be able to get into the country, stay here long enough to actually live in the houses they purchase.
So $250,000, you could buy a house for as little as $250,000, then put another $250,000 into real estate one way or another. Has to add up to $500,000, but $250,000, that's not exactly a mansion in many parts of the country these days. I said Chinese and Canadians just as examples at the top of the show, but this would be any non-U.S. citizen who wanted to own real estate here, and then they'd get – the new piece here is they would get a residence visa along with that purchase, Nick?
Yeah, that's right. Now, this is not a green card, so you wouldn't be able to work here. It's not putting you in the front of the line to become a U.S. citizen. It's not even giving you permanent residency. It would be 3 years, a renewable visa every 3 years. If you sell the house, then unless you get some other kind of visa to stay here, you would not be able to stay in the country, remain here legally. But that's pretty much the idea, is spend a chunk of cash and we will let you into the country.
Last year, International Buyers U Report accounted for about $82 billion in residential real estate sales. That was up in a big way from the year before. So it's not as though foreigners haven't noticed that there are fire sale prices in this country. There's already a very significant presence of foreign buyers when it comes to houses, homes, condos, Nick.
Yeah, that's right. And you see a lot of demand from Canadians in Arizona. In California, you have a lot of Asian buyers. In Florida, you have a lot of Europeans and Latins. Brazilians are making up a growing share of purchases right now in Miami. And the places that are some of the most attractive for foreign buyers are also some that were the most overbuilt. And so these lawmakers here are taking an idea that's really been out there for a while. You know, Warren Buffett gave an interview this summer where he said, why not let rich immigrants in here and help us with our housing problem? But now we're actually seeing policymakers take it from the idea stage and saying, well, why not actually do this?
And there is a lot of demand. I mean, you quote a real estate agent in California, Maggie Navarro. She's in San Marino, a pretty nice L.A. neighborhood. She says that at this point, she recently sold a home for $1.67 million to a Chinese buyer, 8% above the asking price, cash deal. She says that at this point, nearly every listing she's put on the market in San Marino, quoting her here from you, has had at least one full-price cash offer from a buyer in mainland China. I mean, that's incredible.
Right. And I think it speaks to the point that real estate is hyper-local, right? So something like this is not going to have a huge impact nationally. It'll barely move the needle. But if you look at individual housing markets and really the submarkets, the specific neighborhoods, and you look at a place like San Marino, that part of the San Gabriel Valley, there's a huge amount of interest from Chinese and Taiwanese foreign buyers and other markets in Phoenix where you have a lot of Australians or Canadians that are really interested in buying. And so in those individual submarkets, this could really actually have a pretty big jolt in terms of bringing in a new source of demand to buy houses.
Aren't those what you call them submarkets? I mean, they tend to be places where a lot of Americans dream about living. I mean, boomers who, or anybody else who one day would like to retire in Florida, or people who'd love to live in a nice area of California. Aren't those desirable locations for Americans, too, who I guess right now, this indicates, can't afford to live there?
Yeah, they certainly are desirable locations. I think you look at somewhere like New York City. You know, Chuck Schumer, of course, the senator that's sponsoring this, represents New York. And this would bring a lot of potentially bring more foreigners to New York. Not only are they going to buy condos that are being built, apartments here, but they're also going to spend money, go to Lincoln Center, see shows, go to Rockefeller Center, spend money on goods and make purchases. And so the hope here is that there is maybe a spillover effect where not only are people going to buy houses here, but they're going to spend money on lots of other things. And this housing provision is part of a larger package of immigration measures designed to get more tourists and foreigners spending money in the United States.
Let's hear from one of the locales where this is going on. Susan Daly joins us now. She's a realtor with Daly & Company in Vero Beach, Florida. Susan, thanks very much for joining us today.
Hello, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So how much interest are you getting from foreign buyers for properties in your neck of the woods, Susan?
Significantly. We're a relatively small barrier island community, about an hour north of Palm Beach, and we've long been a haven for Western Europeans and Canadians. But just, I would say, in the past 5 years, for example, the market share of the percentage of real estate they're buying has risen from perhaps, say, 20% of our market to 35 to 40%. And it's really a confluence of circumstances. You've got buyers that have homeland currency that's stronger against our dollar,
mm-hmm.
scant competition from U.S. buyers, so it magnifies their buying power. Vero's always known to be affordable, but yet even our affordability has gone down. Or, you know, we're back to 03 levels of pricing. And additionally, they buy with cash, or certainly they have readily available credit. And most importantly, I think, Tom, they're confident. They're confident in the future, and these are the very things that are keeping U.S. buyers on their hands and are boosting the ability of what foreign buyers can get for their dollar here.
I said Susan, I should have said Sally, but Sally, did you say 35 to 40% of your sales are now foreign buyers?
Correct. And by and large, Tom, they are cash transactions because in many of these communities of homeland countries like Canada, mortgages are a fairly new invention. So they're cash buyers. They're smart. They do their homework. Whether it's $200,000 or $2 million, they're doing their homework and they're buying in communities that have proven appreciation. And they know that this confluence of circumstances may never repeat itself. So I have move-up buyers. I have young buyers with babies buying retirement homes they know they're not going to need in 10 years.
But not Americans. These are foreign buyers you're talking
Correct.
About.
Correct. Germans, Canadians, we get ex-flight out of South Florida of Latinos looking for more affordability and less crowds and more of a laid-back environment, such as we're nicknamed the Hamptons of Florida. So we even get ex-flight up crawling up the coast from South Florida.
You know, Sally, that must be great for you, but what about American move-up buyers or young couples with babies who dream of retiring or living in Florida one day? I mean, 35% to 40%.
There's no doubt about it, Tom. We're an aspirational community. But mm-hmm. what's interesting is there is pent-up demand. There is pent-up domestic demand. But what there isn't is confidence and jobs. It's a domino effect, really. You've got somebody, perhaps, that would like to come down to Florida, but they've got to sell the place up in Massachusetts. They can't sell the place in Massachusetts, so they can't come down and buy here. So it creates a huge stopgap.
Sally, are you for this new bill? Do you think it would tick the percentage?
Absolutely. Our position is more buyers make for a better market, and any removal of an impediment that brings a qualified buyer to the market helps clear inventory. It helps increase balance between supply and demand. It puts appraisers back to work. It puts furniture stores selling furniture, all the corollary ripple effects that Nick alluded to. I can't speak to immigration issues. I'm talking in terms of sheer impact on the housing market. More buyers make for a better market.
Huge in Vero Beach, Florida. 35 to 40% in Sally Daly's experience. She's with Daly & Company right there. That's a real eye-opening report, Sally, and we appreciate your being with us. Thank you so much.
A pleasure. Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking today about American housing. It is a hot subject right now. Nick Timiraos is with us from the Wall Street Journal, real estate reporter there. He knows the national scene inside and out, and everybody's thinking about it these days. President Obama in Las Vegas yesterday saying he wants to do more with easier refinancing to help homeowners whose properties are underwater.
This is going to help a lot more homeowners refinance at lower rates, which means consumers save money, those families save money, and it gets those families spending in it again, and it also makes it easier for them to make their mortgage payments so that they don't lose their home and bring down home values in the neighborhood.
There's President Obama speaking to Americans struggling underwater with their properties. But in the Senate, Mike Lee, Republican of Utah, Chuck Schumer, Democrat of New York, have another idea as well, and not for people who are struggling, but for international buyers who would like to come and buy and live in this country. Here's Chuck Schumer, Senator Schumer, on CNN last Thursday, saying the United States can attract a significant amount of overseas home buyers under his proposed bill.
America's still that lady with the torch, and there are millions and millions of people around the world, many who have some means, who want to come here. And so if you say you'll get a visa, you'll never become a citizen. This is not a citizenship path, but you'll get a visa if you live here and spend your money here and pay your taxes here. There are going to be a whole lot of people who do it.
Come on in. Buy it. Live in it. Come when you like. On the Charlie Rose Show in August, billionaire Warren Buffett spoke just kind of offhandedly here about the potential benefits of wealthy foreign homeowners.
You could have a bunch of rich immigrants come in and they'd all need houses, for example. If you wanted to change your immigration policy so that you let 500,000 families in, but they had to have a significant net worth and everything, you'd solve things very quickly.
Bring it on, says Warren Buffett. Nick Timiraos, stand by in New York. I want to welcome into our conversation from Philadelphia, Susan Watcher, professor of finance and real estate, University of Pennsylvania, author of The American Mortgage System. Susan, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you with us.
Pleasure.
And with us from New Haven, Connecticut, Jacob Hacker, professor of political science at Yale University, author of Winner Take All Politics, How Washington Made the Rich Richer and Turned Its Back on the Middle Class. Jacob Hacker, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
Susan, first to you. We've got a lot of pain in our housing market right now. Is this a piece of the answer? Is it a good one?
Yes, this is a piece. This is not going to be a game changer, as Nick has already indicated. The announcement yesterday by President Obama is probably, all told, quite a bit more important. It is also not a game changer. Nonetheless, these are, particularly Obama's announcement yesterday, is a win-win for buyers as well as for sellers and for the overall market. And this, too, in certain markets which have a huge amount of vacancies, which could lead to a downward spiral, and that's what we have to be concerned about, another vicious cycle which could unravel the slow recovery of the overall economy.
So a downward spiral. Are you surprised, Susan, to hear the kind of numbers that are out there? The report from San Marino in California, Nick brings us, of a realtor, when she's selling, this is a nice community in L.A., you know, she's got at least one full-price cash offer from a buyer from mainland China for nearly every listing she puts on the market there. Or our realtor, Sally, in Vero Beach, Florida, selling 35% to 40% of her inventory there now to foreign buyers. Does that surprise you, Susan?
No, it doesn't surprise me. We are affordable always relative to other countries. We don't appreciate how affordable housing is in the United States relative to our peers, and even countries like China, housing is more expensive. And right now, America is on sale. We are more affordable than ever.
Jacob Hacker, look at this with us. Susan looks to the refinance program that the president's laying out in the last day or two here, saying it may be more important, though we've seen announcements on that front already that, you know, a lot of noise and then not that much happened. This may not be huge, though in some communities it clearly is huge, but it just got us wondering, Jacob, about where we're headed here. I mean, I think part of the what some people thought of that might be a payoff in all the mess of the housing market would be that housing prices would come down to where more Americans could afford them, or that we would figure out a way to lift the economy up to where Americans had the income to afford them. But if you just kind of short-circuit it and sell it to the global affluent, what does that do for Americans? Or maybe it does a lot, Jacob. How do you see it?
Well, I see it as an indication of really the dire situation we're in politically right now, because the notable feature of both these proposals is, well, the first by Senator Schumer is very modest, as Nick and Susan said, mm-hmm. and the second, which is, as Susan indicated, much more important, the refinancing, the restructuring of the Obama refinancing program is an executive-led program because the president has had no success in getting Congress to pass any of the elements of his jobs agenda. And the housing market for Americans will continue to suffer until the economy overall improves. So what I see is a political system that is failing to respond to a continuing economic crisis. The housing collapse was at the epicenter of that crisis, and it makes sense to focus on that collapse, but the scale of action that's going to be needed to get things moving again is much larger than anything that's being contemplated. And sadly, what's being contemplated seems to be at the outer limits of what our political system can bear. So I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I think that's the larger message here, that there's a real move to try to embrace smaller scale initiatives that can at least keep momentum moving forward, much as President Clinton did, say, in the late 1990s with executive-led actions. But that was in a strong economy. Right now, we really need more serious action, and our political system is just not producing it.
Susan, we've got all kinds of response here on Facebook. Dot says, foreigners want to come and buy big swaths of foreclosed homes in derelict conditions after being abandoned. You know, I say let them have as much as they want, though I'm not sure that's what foreigners are buying here. On the other hand, on Twitter, Ryan says, don't we do enough for rich people here? Do we really need to extend generosity to rich abroad so they can summer in the U.S.? I mean, what about that concern here, Susan, that instead of fixing our economy so we have stronger incomes or letting housing prices float down to where Americans can enjoy them on the beach in their own country, we sell it to a global rich class that, it'll bail out our banks. But does that really leave us in a better situation as, you know, citizens, humans?
This is a marginal contribution or harm, depending on where you're looking from it. I don't think this is where
it's all Chuck Schumer is proposing right now.
Exactly.
Same with Mike Lee. You call it marginal, but it's his answer. Sell it to.
I'm sure it's, you know, for New York City, it could be very helpful. And in terms of, and other markets as well, but it's not going to be a game changer for the U.S. as a whole. And it also really doesn't compete for affordable housing. We absolutely need affordable housing, and housing is more affordable than ever. Mortgage rates are more affordable than ever. But the real problem is that people, two things. One, often cannot get mortgages because of their dinged credit. Credit underwriting conditions have been ratcheted up to a point where it's far more difficult to get a mortgage now than it ever was, you know, 2004. Of course, the pendulum has swung one way and then all the way to the other way. And the other problem is confidence. There are people who are on the sidelines who perhaps would want to be homeowner, would want to, for their family situation, would like to move and have some certainty because rents are going up too, Tom.
Mm-hmm.
So homeownership for some in some places looks good, but there's a lack of confidence. And most important, most worrisome, is what happens in the dire outcome of housing prices falling again, let's say, in January. The most recent report this morning that came out, housing prices is firm, but that's August. That may be a seasonal factor. Now we're into a period of time where foreclosures will have a higher share of the market. That's a real concern for the overall economy. It's a concern for a recession. Recession, of course, means, again, job loss and great instability. That's what we have to keep our eye on.
Drop down again. Of course, a lot of people would like to step up, not drop down, and do what it takes to make that happen. Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts is calling. Alan, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great program and great guest you have. I'm a real estate broker in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and this has long been a hotbed of foreign buyers buying properties as an investment strategy and also for their kids to go to school. I think the plan for foreigners to buy property should be opened up to allow a husband, wife, and child to come as well.
Actually, it does. Possibly. It does. If they buy $500,000 worth of real estate in total, as little as $250,000 on one house, they can bring the whole family.
This is correct. And what's really going to fuel the market is my Asian friend says there's already instability in the Chinese market, and all the Chinese know this. They're getting ready to have a real collapse over there. And my estimation is going to be a minimum of 1 million Chinese buyers taking advantage of this program for the next 24 to 30 months, and possibly up to 2, 3, 4 million to take advantage of this, because America has political stability. And that's why they want to buy here, because political instability is the bane of anybody with money or investment or family.
Hey, Alan, you may be right. I'm looking at a story in the China Daily about this, so they're definitely talking about it in China. But with numbers like that, what does it mean if you've got, I don't know, Chinese sort of owning, you know, all of coastal Florida where Americans dream of retiring, but you know what? You can't afford it, Americans. Let the Chinese live there.
Well, Tom, they're also buying in Quincy and Lowell and other more working-class areas.
Mm-hmm.
And this helps what we call the secondary real estate market outside of the main urban five-star locations like Cambridge or Back Bay or Manhattan. They're going to buy everywhere. It's not just Chinese. You have political instability in many other countries. And the biggest threat to the American real estate market, I believe, is class warfare brewing. Because if there's political instability here of attacking the rich, foreigners may think twice about investing here if they think there's going to be some kind of growing insurrection attacking banks and financial institutions. In theory, I agree with a lot of the principles what the people in Occupy Wall Street have, but in practice, I think it's very bad for the economy.
Alan, we've got the perspective. We've got it loud and clear, and you say, yes, let's do it. We need the buyers. As a real estate broker, that's easy to understand, and I appreciate your call. One more, Nashville, Tennessee. Paul, you're on the air.
Hello. In my point of view is that it's very short-sighted, and I understand that markets need to move, but when you consider that you're going to have foreign nationals in our country, which I don't mind them being here, but owning huge sections of property, then I think there's a problem there. And whether it be Arab or Chinese or Canadian or whoever, they get the money from that property. They will be the ones that benefit from it.
But in the short term, Paul, you've got American sellers who can't find buyers. At least they're bringing, I mean, this is cash money they're bringing into the system. You hear Susan warning about another drop down in the market. Is that risk worth it?
No, I don't think that it's going to. I don't think it's going to make that much difference because you still have Americans without jobs.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's really, I mean, the bankers, like you said before, the bankers are the ones that are going to get the benefit from it, and certainly the sellers are, and I do feel for them. But I think in the long run, what's going to happen is that large portions of our country could be foreign owned. And they're the ones that are really going to get the benefit from it. So we're selling off our assets at this time and allowing those that at some other time when our economy is strong to sell those assets and gain the benefit from it.
Paul, we've got it. I mean, I know nationally it'll be a small percentage. On the other hand, you hear Sally in Vero Beach, 35 to 40% of her sales now going that way. Jacob Packer, here's a listener online saying, this is John, says, we shouldn't be propping up housing values. The prices should fall to where they are affordable for Americans. Make the banks start lending instead of selling off the country to the international rich. What do you say to that perspective, Jacob?
Well, I think it's certainly the case that housing values have come down a lot, and that is actually a good thing for getting the market moving again. The problem, as Susan was indicating before, and as I was discussing, mm-hmm. is that people do not feel confident in the economy. Unemployment is and underemployment is still very, very high. And it's also the case that our credit markets, despite low interest rates, are not working very well right now. So I think that the right response now is to worry less about house prices per se and focus more on helping those who are underwater or at risk of foreclosure while simultaneously trying to get lending going again. I mean, there are models in our history from the Homeowners Loan Corporation during the New Deal to policies that have been tried in the past to try to help restructure debt. And I know that the president is seeking to move in that direction. So far, though, they've been very limited. And that fundamentally is at the heart of our problems, is the huge debt overhang in our economy. It is like a weight that's pulling the American middle class underwater as they try to swim at the surface. And so anything that can really try to reduce the debt load that people are bearing to get them out from under these great financial risks could help enormously in getting the economy moving again. Otherwise, I fear that we're going to have a kind of equivalent of, you know, economic chronic fatigue syndrome, where we'll have this low-grade fever for years to come, and we really need to have some serious treatment.
Nick Timorosa, do you see the danger of housing prices chunking down again in this country? And could, you know, between the refinancing package the president's rolled out and steps like selling to making it easier for foreigners, more enticing for foreigners, could that help stop that further decline?
I do think there's a danger of home prices going down again. Nothing like the 30% decline that we've been through, where home prices were just in free fall. But any little drop further makes our problem that much harder, because you will have more people underwater. And if the economy doesn't grow and you have more people falling underwater, you have more foreclosures. More foreclosures on the market will lead prices down further, and you get into this vicious cycle. Can these steps break that vicious cycle? I don't think so. They are at the margins. I think the foreign buyer proposal in particular is a sign of almost how desperate we are, both in the housing market but also in when it comes to political will. Because, you know, as Louis Ranieri, the godfather of the U.S. mortgage market, put it, these steps are helpful. They're like triage. And so he said, you know, I'll take any little incremental steps I can get, if that's the best I can get. But we still really aren't addressing the biggest problems holding back the housing market, as Susan and Jacob said, and that is that we have 11 million homeowners who owe more than their homes are worth, and we don't have demand for homes because credit is so tight, and because people just are worried about their jobs. They're worried about home prices going down further. And so until we do something to break that psychology and get people confident again, it's going to be tough.
Nick Timorosa with The Wall Street Journal, we really appreciate your reporting and your being with us today. Thank you so much for joining us, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about American housing today and federal policy and a proposal in the U.S. Senate to entice in more foreign buyers for American homes and give them visas when they do that. Spend $500,000, as little as $250,000 on a single home, and that much again on another or more, rent it out, whatever. Get a residence visa. Bring your family. Live in the USA. Pay taxes. Let's go to our listeners. Antioch, Tennessee. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Tom, I've lived in Africa, Asia, and the Middle East, and it's hard for me to express my shame and distress that our country could contemplate selling favors for a consideration like this. Overseas, we looked at places that did this as people who were just sunk in bribery and corruption. And for our country to do that, I think is just terrible.
John, maybe that's old-fashioned. We're in a globalized economy now. Money's moving all over the place. Maybe you were right, but maybe that day is behind us. You know, take down the borders, bring in the money, let's go.
If the people overseas want political stability for their money, they have two recourses. One is to participate in our stock market and or buy United States bonds, and the other is to make their own countries law-abiding.
Yeah, John, I appreciate your call very much. Jacob Hacker, response online here. Andrea says, I think this is a great idea, a sign of our turning to creative solutions. Bring in buyers, bring in cash. On the other hand, Mims writes, I think it's so unfair. My husband and I just graduated from college, combined income a little more than $60,000. It's hard for us to find jobs, you know, never mind buying a house. Now rich foreigners can come in and compete with us. The chance of owning our own home is even slimmer. What do you say to these perspectives, Jacob?
Well, I mean, I think Mims really sounds like a lot of the folks who are part of the Occupy Wall Street movement, the other 99%, who are pointing out just how tough things have become for the middle class with big debts, particularly student loans, with a perilously weak economy, one that's been weak for a long time for middle class workers. And I share her frustration. It's not so much that I worry that this will have a huge effect on the ability of her to get homes, but to go back to what we've been talking about before, that it just isn't going to address the more fundamental problems that our economy is facing. I mean, we have basically three big problems. We have a political system that is stalemated and increasingly dysfunctional. It may be stable compared with some other countries' systems, but right now it's stable in the face of a massive crisis, and we need some more action. And then second, we have an immediate economic crisis where there's got to be some measures to try to get the economy moving again, in particular to deal with the really serious debt overhang in the economy and the very poor job market. And third, everyone agrees there are long-term structural problems. I'll just mention one that I think the Occupy Wall Street folks have been rightly paying attention to. We are taking in about 15% of our economy in revenues, in federal revenues. That's about the level of tax revenues that we had in the Eisenhower administration. And part of the reason for that is that we've seen a massive long-term decline of taxes on the very wealthiest Americans, who, like Warren Buffett, have said that they may be paying a lower tax rate than the people who work for them. So I think that's part of the long-term solution would be serious tax reform that would get our government on a stable foundation where it could actually act to deal with some of these crises.
Susan, here's a listener. I'd just like to get your response to this. A listener writes, crash the market, steal trillions from the American taxpayer, cause millions to lose their homes and jobs, depress wages, and refuse to let housing prices drop so Americans could afford them, just so the banks and bondholders don't take a haircut. What do you say to that perspective, Susan?
Well, I certainly can understand the anger. It's been a disaster, and it's affected people's lives, jobs, family. It's not a pretty picture. It's grim. But my concern is we also have to focus on what must be done now to make sure that we don't go into a second double dip. Because if we do, then that could herald Great Depression 2.0. We avoided it first time, could bring it again. Because housing is normally the engine of recovery, and housing right now is simply dead in the water. If it took another leg down, and by the way, I do not expect that to happen, but it could happen.
Mm-hmm.
And if that did happen, it could precipitate a recession. We're not so far away from a slow to no growth, and therefore tipping to a recession. So I think we have to focus on what our options are to make sure these dire outcomes for people, for jobs, don't happen.
Well, here's another question from online, Susan. It says, Tom, could you ask your guests why they think we should be trying to reinflate our housing sector, which was an unsustainable bubble based in monetary policy and induced malinvestment? What about that perspective?
Well, certainly reinflation is not what I'm speaking about by any means, and if it left that impression, I'm very sorry. Housing prices are near stability right now, actually, based on historic relationships with rents and income, but that doesn't mean that we couldn't have an overshooting, a vicious cycle on the downside, just like we had a bubble on the upside. And as that bubble was forming and we had inflated values, there were many people who were warning. I was one of them. Of the instability that would come out of that debt underwriting recklessness. But now we can get to stability. Stability requires, above all, job growth. But there's a potential chicken and egg here, because if we have further instability in the housing market, which, as I said, is usually the engine of recovery, that will lead to a decline in spending. Already, of course, spending is weak. That will lead to a decline in job growth, already weak, and we could have a spiral down. And we don't have that many tools at our hand right now to stop that spiral down. So we have to do what we can to get through 2012, basically, and get some job growth going, get the economy more stable, and so that we can solve the problem going forward and not have, you know, as Japan did, a lost decade or even worse.
Anita, in Medford, Massachusetts. Anita, you're on the air. What do you think about all this, Anita?
Thank you. I want to know where the middle class goes after we sell our house. Rents are more than a mortgage around here. Mm. Banks are not giving mortgages at 3.5% interest. They do not want to give out mortgages for that low interest rate. This is an idea only for the rich, and it benefits only the realtors. Jobs are not. I had to have a $58,000 a year income to get a $250,000 loan.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't making that when I was making good money. Who in the middle class makes that much money in the first place?
Anita's right on, if I may.
Yes, Susan.
Anita's right on. The pendulum has swung far too far in the other direction. That is the problem. That is, that's really where we need to be focusing our concerns on. We've gone far too far in the direction of not making loans to creditworthy people who do want to buy. And in fact, in this market where rents are going up, it is right for their future.
Where does the middle class go, she asks. On Facebook, Carol says, Nick Kristof's Banana Republic Redux, and a new twist on absentee landlords she sees here. Always dreamed of living where arms traders and drug dealers bought villas. Never imagined I'd be able to do that at home. Michael writes, wow, so much for Lady Liberty saying, bring me your huddled masses. Yeah, he says, bring them if they are ultra wealthy. Ray in Maquoketa, Iowa. Ray, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see why we should sell property to anybody from any country that won't sell property to us. There are so many countries that won't allow us to even work there, like Canada. They can come down here and work, but we can't work up there. Now they want to come down here and buy homes, but we can't just go up there and buy homes, or Mexico, or any of those close places I don't even know about further away.
Yeah, Ray, I take your point, though. You might be surprised the number of places where if you've got a load of cash, you can buy homes in a lot of places these days. But true, this is opening our doors wider still. One more, Sean in New Haven, Connecticut. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I think the idea is that we're not paying enough attention to what happens to communities when everybody rents, when everybody's a renter. Often there's blight, and it's, you know, property values go down, and I don't think we should be encouraging home ownership or taking away home ownership so people that have enough money to I guess purchase a home and get someone renting it, and you know, to just wait until the market turns around to flip it over.
Should we use foreign buyers to keep prices up or to get something moving here?
I think prices should come down. If realtors need to make more money, charge 5% instead of 3% if the homes aren't selling for enough money. But I think Americans should be more homeowners in America and less renters.
Sean, I appreciate your call, but just try charging more in a market like this. Joe in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Joe, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Mm-hmm. Listen, the problem right now is the falling American wages. The Federal Reserve Board's policy since the summer of 2008 has been to hold the consumer price index flat. And since we are in an age of declining resources and it takes more labor to dig stuff out of the ground now, and will continue to be so, then American wages must continue to fall. And so does everybody else's cash flow then. Whether you're a doctor or a lawyer, it doesn't matter. Everybody's incomes are falling. With increased With falling wages, it makes no sense to borrow or lend money. Lending is dead. It will remain dead as long as this monetary policy continues. And the people who can buy houses are the people with cash. You cannot buy on a long-term loan. You can't buy anything on a long-term loan because you won't have the money, or let's see, a large number of people won't, and cash flow has to continue to decrease.
Get wages up, you say.
The best you can do is to sell them to people with cash, and that will put some money back in circulation in the U.S. economy.
The best we can do, but that doesn't sound too great, what you're describing there, Joe. I mean, Jacob, you know, Anita's question really just resonates with me. Where does the middle class go?
Yeah.
Is this what globalization means? Just, you know, everything throws open and pretty soon, don't think about retiring in Florida because, you know, some Chinese guy who sold you your pants at Walmart is going to be living there.
Well, I'm reminded of a term that the Citigroup, some Citigroup economists came up with back in the mid-2000s to describe what the economy had become. They said it was a plutonomy. That is, all of the activity was really increasingly concentrated at the top. And now it's not just a domestic plutonomy, it's a global plutonomy where money is, you know, the rich can come and spend here because that's the only source of consumption that we're going to have. And I think to tie it into what Joe said, you know, this isn't just since 2008 that wages have been stagnant. I mean, we've seen a record period here where we have median incomes back to levels that they were in 1994. So we've seen a very long-term stagnation in middle-class incomes, and at the same time, we've seen very large gains in income at the top. So it's not so surprising that a lot of the ideas revolving around, the easy ideas at least, involve trying to figure out ways to get rich people to spend more money. The problem is that the sustainable strategies, the way that we're going to create an economy that works for everyone, are going to involve trying to figure out how to get shared prosperity in the United States going again. And that, to me, is the big challenge. And that's what makes me depressed about this dysfunction of our political system. But there are ideas out there on the table, and I'll just name a couple.
Okay.
Right? We
yep.
We could be talking about major infrastructure development through an infrastructure bank. We could be doing even more serious efforts to try to reduce the debt overhang. We, at the very least, could make sure that unemployment insurance benefits don't run out in December so that 2 million people are suddenly facing a huge cliff. They're falling off economically. So there are things we could do. Our political system is stalemated. It's stalemated in part because those at the very top are not as concerned about these trends as the rest of Americans. They're stalemated because of our deep polarized politics. And I hope that these small-scale efforts will yield fruit. But I hope even more that there'll be greater political pressure to have bigger actions and solutions that meet the scale of the problem.
But instead of those fixes, and Susan, you're saying 2012. Instead of that, we're talking about this. This is what Chuck Schumer and Senator Lee have got on the table. I mean, Mo writes here, while I think this is a great way to reduce the overhead of unsold properties, the end result will be wealthy bankers no longer burdened with foreclosures and our wealthy foreign overlords or landlords demanding immediate rent from American beggars. I mean, you know, I can see an upside here, Susan. If they come, they buy it. We get some cash in the economy. They're going to buy people to fix up homes, buy furniture and all the rest. But is this really where we should be putting our shoulder to the wheel for problems as big as we've got?
Well, in short, as Jacob's already said, small fixes, nonetheless, are fixes. We have a major problem of 25% of mortgages are underwater. People in those homes can't move to where there are jobs. This overhang, this shadow supply, is a threat to the system and to lending to everyone, to lending to small businesses, to lending to affordable home buyers. And while I cannot agree more with Jacob that we need to do the big fixes, we need to do the little fixes too.
So bring those on. You say 2012. What's implied when you say 2012? You think we're just frozen in campaign season until then? You think there's a change in the composition of our representatives in Washington that would mean a break in the logjam? Why will 2012 change it?
Well, I think 2012 is a critical year for the housing market. Housing prices declined last year about 4%. And in fact, in the last months, housing prices have been stable to slightly up. And if we can move to a stable home environment, then people will have confidence to come back to the market, and then this overhang of supply, the shadow supply, the underwater mortgages, which are holding back families from taking jobs and holding back the construction industry, which is usually the engine of growth, that can be, at least we can see some light at the end of the tunnel for solving that, and that could make a big difference for confidence. And it's confidence as well as the inability to get loans that are keeping people from buying homes and keeping the housing sector from contributing to economic growth.
Well, one small proposed step, but a very telling one, in the middle of a very big and difficult picture that I'm not sure we're getting on top of yet, and it doesn't sound like it from either of you today, though we hear the notion, we hear the idea of where that would be. Susan Wachter, we're always very happy to have you with us from the University of Pennsylvania, joining us from Philadelphia.
Pleasure.
Susan, thank you. And Jacob Hacker, author of Winner Take All Politics and the Great Risk Shift. Jacob, thank you for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Listeners, be the first to find out tomorrow's topics and guests by going to our Facebook page, On Point Radio. Hit the like button and you'll get alerts on upcoming shows right there in your news feed. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.